I would like to propose that someone else take on the duty of chairing this meeting, because I may have to fulfill the function of letting everybody know what the lab's comments are, and I don't want to dominate this meeting. It'd be pretty difficult to do all of that and still chair the meeting. I was going to suggest Pete, because he probably doesn't have a lot of comments to make, but he's unable to do it. Is there another volunteer who would like to take on that job?
Whoa.
How about Dave Fertig? Will you do it, Dave?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. Before I turn over the chair, I did send out very late a proposed agenda. I don't know if everyone has seen it, but this is what it includes. An overview of the bylaws from Carol, Kevin, and Erica. First, two, a review and vote on comments from Robinson Spooner, David Green, the KPFA elections coordinator, KPFA, KPFT, and KPFK labs. I forwarded all of these to the IPNB, however, due to the shortness of time, you may not have seen them. And I can act as the person reading the comments as we go through them, or IPNB members who sit on those labs can present their labs comments if they want to. There may also be IPNB members who have comments who have not forwarded them to me. We'd need to go through those. The third item would be, I think we haven't discussed this before, but I just wanted to bring this to the attention of the committee. We do need to discuss and have Kevin prepare two amendments to the Articles of Incorporation, which are necessary. One changes the number of directors. Our articles say the number of directors is 5. That needs to be changed. And also the place of the principal office of the foundation. Those are two simple matters, but I just wanted to bring them up. And the last item would be scheduling further action and any other remaining matters. And is that acceptable to everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
If you could just say what we're doing after the overview.
Oh, after the overview, we would review and vote on comments that have been submitted from Robinson Spooner, any other board member who has a list that we haven't seen yet, the elections coordinator at KPFA, who's a member of Fair Vote, who had just a couple of comments about the description of the election process. I forwarded those. And we have comments from KPFA, KPFT, and KPFK labs.
Shouldn't we vote after we've heard all the comments?
That might be one way. I don't know how to organize this other than to just go through them one at a time, and if it's meaningful, we could read them all and then go back and vote on them.
I don't understand what you mean about voting on comments. I'm sorry.
Well, if somebody's proposing a change, we have to have some means of deciding whether or not we're going to make the change.
Carol?
Yeah.
This is Kevin.
Yeah.
What I would really suggest we do is let's go through the First Amendment and restated bylaws on like a page-by-page basis, and then we have issues relative to the changes. Let's discuss them fully, and let's vote, and then we'll just move on. I think that'll be the easiest way for us to get through this document.
Yeah, I think that you're right, except that all of these comments came in overnight and this morning, and we have to look at each one of them to see which section it relates to. So,
But I think if we have the parties who are making the comments on the phone, they can argue their positions when we're talking about this.
You're saying as we get to the section, raise your question, Kevin?
Yeah. Well, the lab members are not here, but perhaps the representatives of their labs are here who can do that for them.
Well, I think that that's the issue, and that is we all have to represent our single areas to the extent that we're lab reps to the national board. We need to represent what the lab's positions are.
Okay, I'll go with Kevin's suggestion, then. Does anybody
that might be one way. I don't know how to organize this.
There's a comment from your lab. Would you please represent your lab? If you have a personal comment, please represent that to the board.
As a matter of housekeeping, I'd like to ask who will be taking notes on these votes.
I will.
Okay, thank you, Carol.
I didn't see it, but to the best of your knowledge, Carol, was there any comments written from WBAI's lab?
No.
Okay.
None from WBAI and none from WPFW.
Yeah, and Jabari's been working with the lab on their responses, so I unfortunately can't adequately represent their position on those issues, Carol.
Okay. So, Dave, do you want to chair?
Does anyone object?
Okay, now let's proceed. And I think, Kevin, if you could just guide us through the bylaws, page by page, I think we'll end up at the article, so that's a pretty straightforward thing. So if we could just start off and just go page by page, then let's get feedback from everybody to the extent there's any variations suggested by anybody, then we'll deal with that, and then we'll have discussion and then a vote. So Kevin, could you please start off?
Okay, I'm going to let Erica probably lead this because she's been more actively involved in the drafting than I have.
Beautiful.
Okay, I'm going to start by just going through each section, even if there wasn't. I'm going to focus on the sections where there are a change, but if I bypass the section where there wasn't a change from our last version and there are some new comments, please interrupt. I would also like to make one suggestion, and that is that our first section for discussion is actually going to be I'm looking at the redlined version for page reference purposes. Is that the version everyone else is looking at?
No.
No, frankly, I was looking at the clean version.
I have that page as well. So the first section that has changes is going to be section 4 of Article 1, which is the top of page 2, and that's the equal opportunity statement. I would like to wait until the end of the discussion to go there because it'll probably raise up questions about diversity, which I think should be kind of tabled until after we go through the rest of it. Is everyone
sure.
Okay with doing that?
Yeah.
Objections? Yep. No objections? Okay, let's proceed. Thank you.
Okay. The next area where there are changes are going to be Article 3. Beginning with Section 1, where we just clarified definitions of the listener sponsor members under Section 1A. Definitions of staff members under Section B.
What page are you on?
I'm on page 2.
Eric, why don't we give the specific sections, Article 3, Section 1.
Right, sure. Article 3, Section 1A. We revise it simply to add in language that indicates that volunteer work, in order to be counted as a contribution for purposes of membership, has to be done under the supervision of the foundation radio station management.
This is to clarify that service on local boards is not volunteer work at the station. So if you're reporting to the local station board committee, then that doesn't count. If you're reporting to the station manager, then you're volunteering at the station.
Mm-hmm.
And we've made the same change on section Article 3, Section 1, B, with regard to staff members.
I have heard from both the KPFA unpaid staff organization and the WBAI unpaid staff collective bargaining unit about this, and they have come together to request that we change this language. The reason is that there is a collective bargaining unit for unpaid staff at BAI, and there is an unpaid staff organization at KPFA, both of which are formally recognized and both of which define their membership differently from what this says and differently from each other. So they propose that we change the definition of unpaid staff members to read, quote, any member of a foundation radio station, unpaid staff organization, or unpaid staff collective bargaining unit, if any, or if the station has neither such organization, then any volunteer or unpaid staff member of a foundation radio station who has worked for said radio station at least 30 hours in the preceding 3 months, comma, exclusive of fundraising, marathon, telephone, room, volunteer time. They also ask that we search and replace non-paid staff with unpaid staff, which is consistent with usage among the organized unpaid staff organizations.
Does anybody have any comments on that proposal?
I'd like to know what Mr. Fink thinks of that.
It's really a definitional issue. My concern, and I'll just make a general comment concerning the bylaws in total, is oftentimes you want to empower the people who are running the company to make operational decisions that make sense. So sometimes you can get almost too detailed in bylaws, and I think some areas we are being a little too detailed. I think this might be an example of that. I don't think we need to go to that degree of sophistication. I think we can empower, frankly, the labs to make the determination how they want to qualify what is voluntary work, what qualifies as voluntary work for purposes of this definition.
Well,
right.
The definition that we have would exclude most of the unpaid staff organization members at KPFA, and also it appears most of the unpaid staff collective bargaining unit at WBAI.
Excuse me, this is Janice. It's this bargaining unit and the unpaid worker definition is very, it's just crucial to what goes on at WBAI, because the unpaid workers are even the ones who got the union in the first place way back when. So it may seem like a small thing, but getting those words about the collective bargaining unit in there, I think, will make all the difference in the world to workers in here in New York.
If I might interrupt for just a moment, I believe somebody else has just joined us.
Yeah, who joined
us? Yes, Ray LaForest. Sorry to be late. Hello, everybody.
All right.
Carol, this is Rob. I'm a little bit confused. I thought what Erica was speaking to was the issue that volunteer work on a local board committee could not do service for volunteer effort, you know, working with the station.
No, we're talking about the unpaid staff definitions. There's staff members and listener sponsor members.
Right. No. I understand. Okay. I didn't get the transition.
Yeah, we went to staff member definition.
Okay.
So I think what the change is would impact Section 1B2 of Article 3, which says, or any volunteer or non-paid staff member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the unpaid staff organization at KPFA and the unpaid staff collective bargaining unit at WBAI have jointly requested that we change this language.
And as far as I know, AFTRA is recognizing the collective bargaining unit of unpaid staff workers at WBAI.
They have documents which define their membership, and rather than run through at WBAI, the unpaid staff shall be defined such and so, and at KPFA differently, and at any other station otherwise. The suggestion is that we just name these organizations any member of the Foundation radio station unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff collective bargaining unit, if any, or if the station doesn't have neither such organization, then any volunteer or non-paid staff member as previously defined here who has worked at a radio station at least 30 hours in the preceding 3 months.
Carol, we have really no objection to that. I think this is probably a minor issue, and if it's going to make certain
less roll
feel comfortable, let's just
okay.
Go forward.
But I've got a question regarding the volunteering on a committee. Why can't that serve as your volunteer work?
Well, that's a different issue.
I understand
that. We can go back to that.
I'm saying it's based upon Janice's statement, let's roll, meaning she had finished with this position, and I'm going forward. I understand that, Carol. Thank you so much for pointing that out to me.
Hello, this is Ray. Can I address this point?
Let's focus on something, ladies and gentlemen. The staff member's issue, whether that's going to include, for example, the collective bargaining members, including those who volunteer at the fund drives, and also including, I think the term was, unpaid staff organization.
Yeah, the KPFA unpaid staff organization and the WBAI unpaid staff collective bargaining unit are formal organizations that are recognized at their stations. It's really...
Is there any objections to that? Anybody have any objections to that proposal? Okay, hearing none.
Hello, can you restate it for me? I just got on, I'm sorry. This is Ray.
Okay.
Carol, please restate that proposal.
Both the KPFA unpaid staff organization and the WBAI unpaid staff collective bargaining unit have jointly requested that we revise this language because it doesn't describe their members. And they want us to change the language to read any member of a Foundation radio station, quote, unpaid staff organization, end quote, or, quote, unpaid staff collective bargaining unit, end quote, if any. Or, if the station has neither such organization, then any volunteer or unpaid staff member of a Foundation radio station who has worked for said radio station at least 30 hours in the preceding 3 months, exclusive of fundraising marathon telephone room volunteer time, shall be an unpaid staff member.
Okay. I guess we propose.
Can I say something? The WBAI and pay staff, as the committee mentioned, passed a resolution, though. They were worried about that the term volunteer could be confusing. And I think the language, the way it read before, said that said volunteer shall perform, said volunteer work shall be performed under the supervision.
Yeah, that's not eliminated.
Okay,
that's
so they want it added after be performed on an ongoing committed basis? And under the supervision, to differentiate them from somebody who's performing work but is not doing it on an ongoing basis?
Bob Lederer emailed me last night and changed that after consultation with the...
Oh, he has?
There, and yeah.
I see. So that must have been very late because
they
have sent me an email also about this and asked me specifically to raise that question.
Any other questions? I will call for myself just to merely suggest that it, where it states an unpaid staff organization that we add recognized by the foundation.
Okay.
Because
any objection?
Otherwise, any grouping of them are a, quote, organization.
Okay.
Is there any objection to that modification?
Okay.
Nothing like adding stuff, right? Let's see if we can clean up some stuff. Okay. I believe, George, you had indicated some concerns relative to Article 3, Section 1, Sub A.
That's correct.
To listener sponsor members.
That's correct.
Please express your concern there.
My concern is why is it limited to work that is not that is only directed by the management, one, but two, more importantly, my concern is that it not be work performed, volunteer work, I beg your pardon, volunteering on committees.
But yeah, why are we excluding volunteer work performed on committees of the local station board? Is my understanding of his question.
Yeah,
that's the exact statement of my question.
Has anyone got any specific processing on that, or any local volunteer board?
Yeah, I think the reason it was written that way was because volunteer work at the station under the supervision of the management is in lieu of work that people get paid for. Normally. Volunteer work on a committee is a privilege of membership. And so they wanted to differentiate between the two. Also, the station management can't keep track of who's volunteering on committees, and it's their responsibility to keep track of people who qualify to be volunteer members.
Their concern is noted, but I disagree with that rationale. I think we need to reward our We need to recognize our listeners who volunteer both at the station and on our committees. I think to do otherwise flies in the face of what our foundation stands for.
You know, I think we've very clearly articulated what the issues are. I would suggest we vote it because we have a lot of things to do.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, but he just raised a point where he disagrees with this and he's expressing his opinion.
Right.
I mean, I would say, this is Ray, I'm sorry. I would say over here also, I mean, we always understood that the definition of volunteer work would be very broad. And if somebody is doing serious work, I can tell you, before we had the bylaws committee, the lab had a committee here, and some of the people who were not on the lab did a tremendous amount of work to get that committee going, and it went way beyond the 3-hour requirement. Also, I don't know, how is management defined there? For example, in BAI, when people are volunteering doing fundraising, the person, as I can tell, who's supervising that is not a management person, but a staff person.
Right, but they're reporting to the management.
I see. So it's done. Okay, so it's in a broader sense.
So can we agree to change this language in A?
Let's have a vote.
Rob, do you have a comment on that?
What are we talking about changing it to?
I don't think it excludes work, volunteer work on committees.
I think
it applies in the face of what our organization.
So you just want to stop the statement?
So he wants to add work done by on committees, for example.
Include work on committees.
So can I add something else? Those committees are run either by labs, by local station members, or by board members. And therefore, that to me, that would be a way to account for the person's activity.
Do we want to have a vote on this?
Let's please just vote,
Carol.
Yes.
Okay. Is there any more comment?
Can we
I'll just note one meeting is 3 hours. So I mean, anyone that goes to a meeting suddenly gets that qualification.
It's an exclusionary sentence. That, I think that's the vote.
That's right. Okay, so George would strike that last phrase, quote, and shall not include volunteer work on committees of local station board.
Well, I think I'm excluding the whole sentence because it's definitional. Okay, starting from said volunteer work, because if you just leave in the first part of it, then you've kind of defined it as well.
Mm-hmm. George, is that consistent with your approach? Would that be acceptable to you, George?
I'd reach a third compromise, and that is, I have no problem with the first clause in the sentence, but I would strike the word no, or strike the word not.
Okay.
I think you should include volunteer work on committees.
Everybody looking at that copy, they see that in RSP section 1.
Exclude the word not.
The word not in the last phrase. Okay.
So go ahead.
Let's do a roll call vote. First, let's...
Okay, so we're voting on keeping the sentence and just taking the word not out.
No, we're
ending the sentence that said volunteer work shall be performed under the supervision of radio station management, period.
No.
All right, then we're eliminating
the
that
word
statement.
Carol, listen to what we're saying.
Listen.
It's not. Excluding the word not. Excising that word.
And shall include volunteer work on committees of local stations.
That's right.
All right.
Okay, so let's do the old roll call here, and we'll start off with Carol.
No.
Rob?
No.
Pete?
Yes.
Janice?
Yes.
Teresa?
Man, I'm confused.
Well, I'm sorry.
Are you
in the club?
I'm going to abstain. I'm just, maybe this is just not conducive to... making informed decisions. I'm sorry.
Well, just taking the word not out of that phrase.
What was I talking about?
Leaves it up to the discretion of the...
I would say yes to taking not out of the phrase.
Okay. Who said that?
That's Charles.
Charles, what was your vote?
Yes.
And George, yes?
Yes, absolutely. And the fine tradition of Pacifica and our precious foundation. And all those who believe in it.
All vote yes. And Ray?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so there it's recorded. Okay. Carol, you got that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Could you just read that work performed under the supervision of the foundation, radio station management, OSCN, and RC, okay, and do volunteer work or something?
And shall include volunteer work on committees of a local station.
That's fine.
That's what it reads now.
Okay.
Okay. Next issue, then. Let's move on section by section here.
I have one more question. It's Erica. Under section 1B, under staff members, we have the same language, so should we strike a not out of that sentence as well? Yep. That sentence appears in both of these sections.
Oh.
Okay. I don't see
that. Yes, it's in there. It's in the... if you look under staff members shall be...
Why would staff members be performing, work on committees of the local station board?
Well, they're open to their participation.
Is it prohibited?
Oh, yeah.
And they do work on committees as a KPFA lab right now.
But they do not fill roles otherwise.
But that's not why they're staff members, Carol, is what I'm saying.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, we have to be careful in changing stuff now because we're going back on some of the foundational work that we did to write the bylaws, initially.
That's right.
And if we start making a lot of changes off the top of our head, we're really going to be kicking, the way we built these bylaws, and we haven't built them easily.
That's right.
That's a fair statement, Rob. Is there any motion to make an alteration to sub D? Hearing none, let's move on.
Okay, so slow down, cowboy.
We got to move on here, kid.
Oh, but wait, hold on.
You've had years on this. I think it's all right.
I think we're going to do the same thing here, because this is for volunteers as well.
Are you moving that we modify this subsection similarly, George?
Yes.
And what?
Any comments?
Yes.
So,
can we hear it?
I'm sorry?
Can we hear the comment?
Yes, I'm getting to that. Thank you. Any volunteer, non-paid staff member of a foundation who has worked for said radio station at least 30 hours preceding 3 months. And then it said volunteer work shall be performed under the volunteer work under the supervision of the foundation radio station management and shall not include volunteer work on committees. Volunteer work on committees.
Listen, y'all, we need to, I mean...
George, we're defining staff members of the board, people that represent the staff.
Yeah.
They are not going to be staff members by virtue of work that they do on local station board committees.
Yeah, Rob is right. They're staff members because they're at the station producing programming and engineering.
And they're specifically not volunteers.
And they're not paid. That's why they call them volunteers. At KPFT, they call them volunteers. At WBAI, they call them unpaid staff.
I see.
That's my point.
No, George, I understand what your sentiment is, but you're rendering the function, the definitional function of membership, meaningless here.
Yeah. What's that?
You're doing violence to the bylaws, George.
Well, they've been pretty violated already, but the fact is, ladies and gentlemen, the issue is, if there's a matter of clarification for George, that's one thing. If George understands what he's proposing and its impact in terms of how staff are defined, then let's discuss that. George, are you clear on Rob's concern relative to the definition of staff being very distinct from that of volunteer members?
I respect and trust Rob greatly, but when it says non-paid staff, what that means, just based on my experience with this foundation, based on what Carol just said, and that is that in Houston we call them volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
At WBAI, you just said, as I understand it, they call them non-paid staff.
No, they're two different different people. Volunteers are volunteers, and then there's unpaid staff. They're two different things at BAI, George. So don't even bring us into this, I guess, at this point.
But Carol just said that in KPFA they use the term volunteer
I want to make a suggestion, if I may. I think this is not a topic that really is going to warrant a lot of our minutes today. I suggest we just take it to a vote.
I realize that, but we've got to process it. So we're going to conduct a vote on this real quick. Is there any objection to that?
Is there any lack of clarity as to the difference between staff volunteers and listener sponsor member volunteers?
Yes.
Okay.
What is non-paid staff in
unpaid staff is the term that is used at BAI and KPFA to refer to staff volunteers as opposed to listener sponsor volunteers.
So would it be helpful to put staff volunteer?
No.
Because over here in BAI, volunteer means something completely different. It will not fit in the staff.
So don't say staff volunteers are muddy in the water.
The reason it is written the way it is because the terminology is different at different stations.
I understand that.
And at KPFT, they understand their volunteer staff to mean the same thing we mean when we say unpaid staff. And their volunteer staff is a different kind of volunteer from somebody who comes in and answers the phone during a fund drive.
Can I ask Rob a question? Rob?
Yes.
Are you saying that if we take the not out of that sentence, as George, as we did in the previous paragraph, then that changes the definition of a staff member? Is that what you mean when you say we're doing violence to the bylaws? George is doing violence to the bylaws?
What I'm saying is that what we're trying to do here is define two classes of members.
Mm-hmm.
And by talking about the ability of staff members to obtain, to have membership status based on work that they do for the local station board committees, does not make sense here, because what we're saying is that these people perform work in lieu of pay as regular employees of the station. And it's just that we're making distinctions here without understanding what the purpose of this section of the bylaws is.
So why are we talking about the committees then, the volunteer work on committees here? I'm sorry, I'm moving with Teresa now, I don't understand.
Okay, if I might, they're free.
Maybe it shouldn't be there.
What it says, if we were to say, and shall not include volunteer work on committees, that would mean anybody who would volunteer work on a committee for a local station board of 30 hours or more automatically is deemed unpaid staff. And they're not working on production, they're not working in the station, they're not doing...
And that is not the definition.
No.
That's right.
Now I understand.
There needs to be a distinction is what I think Rob is saying.
Yes.
Are there any other questions? Can we proceed to a vote, ladies and gentlemen?
No, my concern is greater than that, David. My concern is that for those of us that have been trying to write bylaws documents, I'm very concerned that if board members now begin raising issues that have gone through iteration after iteration after iteration because they've not been involved in these discussions, you're threatening to do things to the bylaws at this point that will reduce the meaning of what we're doing here. So if you haven't been involved in the process and you're not sure what you're doing, just bringing, you know, changes at this point is not helpful.
Okay. Any other comments? Okay.
But I just hope that Rob doesn't mean that people are comfortable with things in a serious fashion, that they should be uncomfortable about raising it.
No, absolutely not, Ray. Absolutely not. It's that some of the relationships here in the bylaws are very important, and we can't just focus on a particular sentence and say, I don't like this sentence.
Okay.
The function of the sentence is what it does within the context of this article of the bylaws.
And if I can inquire, George Barnstone, is your motion stand or do you withdraw it?
It stands.
Okay, let's do a roll call. Any objection?
Yes.
One objection? Okay, hearing no more than one objection, I will proceed with a roll call. Carol, this is on, the motion is to remove the word not in sub B of Article 3, Section 1. Carol?
No.
Rob?
No.
Pete?
No.
Janice?
No.
Teresa?
No.
Charles?
No.
George?
Yes.
Dave says no. Ray?
No.
Okay. Now, next issue. Let's move on, ladies and gentlemen.
Moving on to section, we're now on page 3, section 2, the term. This section was just revised to shorten because it was very detailed, and we try to shorten clear. Are there any questions?
Any questions or objections or concerns?
We're on term?
Yes.
Term. Article 3, section 2. Hearing none, let's move on, please.
Our next change would be Article 3, Section 3, on membership affiliation. This is revised to add a sentence. It will be the last sentence that says, in the event that a member does not notify the foundation of which radio station wishes to be affiliated, it will be deemed affiliated with that radio station to which it made its last.
Any objections or concerns?
No.
Hearing none stated, let's proceed.
Okay. The next changes were made to Article 3, Section 5. These were just minor changes to make it consistent with other sections of the bylaws.
Right. So the reference to Section 1B of Article 15, I believe, is a typo?
Right. It should be Article 16.
1B Article 16?
Yes.
Oh, that's a typo?
Yes.
1-6, okay.
Yeah, it should be Article 1B, I'm sorry, Section 1B of Article 16 is how it should now read.
Okay.
Any objections or concerns? All right, next issue, please.
Moving.
Wait a minute.
Sorry.
Let's see. They don't have the right to vote on any amendment of the bylaws. Oh, it says for which member approval is required.
Right.
Strike that. Sorry.
Okay.
Moving down to Section 6. The first changes appear in Section B of that Section 6, which really just make a cosmetic changes of and choice of words for chairperson and executive officer. We are making one change, though, to be consistent with California Code Section 5511A, which will include a reference that any notice of a special meeting shall be given at least 20 days and no more than 90 days before an actual meeting date. And that is required because the quorum for listener-sponsored members is less than one-third of the total number of members. And so it's required by law.
Okay, I'm a little confused just about the second part of the clause. If notice of the special meeting is not provided to the members within 20 days after the written request is received,
mm-hmm.
The persons requesting the meeting may give notice to the members.
Yes.
That's if the foundation fails to do its duty in regards to
the members. Whoever wants to have the meeting, I got it.
You can do it.
Okay.
And what will happen is if you go two sentences before there, that begins with set notice, must state the location, date, and time of the meeting, specify the general nature of the business, blah, 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 blah. At the end of that sentence, we'll add in the caveat about the notice being at least 20 days, but no more than 90 days before the date of the meeting.
So change 35 to 20?
Actually, well, it's 20. The meeting date must be at least 30 days.
So the notice must be at least 20. So you're adding a sentence to what we're looking
exactly,
at.
Exactly, because the notice has to be at least 20 days from the date of meeting, but the notice also cannot have to be at least or no less than 35 days from the date on which a request for a meeting was received.
Everybody understand that?
Since this is a technical legal matter, I think we can just move on.
Is there any objections, concerns?
Let me see if I understand this.
Sure.
We're now required to give 20 days notice before a meeting or after a meeting?
You have to give 20 days notice before the actual meeting, but your notice of the meeting has to come at least 35 days after a request for a meeting.
We recognize, ladies and gentlemen, this is a special meeting of the members, not a special meeting of the board.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Dave.
Very important to
all right, just one clarification.
Okay. Any other objections or concerns on that section, please? Okay, let's move on.
Moving on. Let's see. The next one would be the following section, Section 6D of Article 3, Action in Lieu of Meeting. There was a change. It was actually the last, a last sentence was added. I think this was consistent with maybe a result from a straw poll, that any ballots which are sent to members for voting that are done in lieu of actual meeting should include statements in favor and against the proposed action, presumably to give them information about the basis for the vote in the first place.
Very good. Has anybody got any objections or concerns on that one? Hearing none, let's proceed.
The next change would be the following section, Section 7. There are sentences added at the end to just clarify that there may be times when the members are not voting as classes, i.e., as a staff member versus a listener sponsor a member, and when they're voting as a group. For purposes of quorum, it will be 10% of all the members together.
Any concerns or objections?
Oh, 10% of all members together.
Yes.
I mean,
Because the members will sometimes vote in classes, which means that the staff members' votes will be tallied separately from the listener sponsor members, but there are other actions where the members may vote together. And so we establish quorums for each of those scenarios, consistent with what your straw poll said.
If I may, are there any concerns or questions about this? I'll just comment that there was a concern expressed at the KPRC.
Dave, I mean, I appreciate your zealous representation of your station here, but I'm not quite finished with my question.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to move on.
But your zealousness is noted, thank you. In part of this, as I'm reading this, 10% of all the members, a quorum shall be 10% of all the members, not 10% of the members of that class.
Well,
only combined for that purpose.
If there is an action which requires a vote of all the members together and not a vote of the members of the class, for example, if you're a staff member, you would never vote in an election for a listener sponsor delegate. So those types of situations would require a vote that is of separate classes, but there are some votes where the members would actually vote together. And if they're voting together, a quorum is 10%. If they're voting separately, then the listener sponsor's quorum is 10% and staff member's quorum is 1/3. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Any other questions or concerns?
Mm-mm.
Okay, well, let's move on. I'll zealously represent KPFK down the road. Next issue, please.
Moving on to Section 8 of the same Article 3. It's going to be 8B. There were some changes just for cleaning up, but I think the primary change on that section is going to be an addition of two sentences at the end of Section 8. It gives the foundation the ability to provide a means of voting via the Internet.
Erica, I received some comments from David Green, who was the coordinator of the past two KPFA elections, about timing requirements, how much time it takes to do things. And I wanted to alert everyone to those two things that he sent me.
So you may want to go through the changes you've made, but he's saying there's some things we've got in here that can't be done.
That's fine. I mean, the language that we had is really kind of general and was leaving it to the foundation's discretion based on our understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It was the desire of the board to allow for Internet voting.
Yeah.
Is the problem Internet voting or is it some other problem?
No, it's for mail ballots. It takes longer than 5 days to prepare and send to lay out and send to the printer. And so he's got a different schedule that we need to do.
Okay, no. What section are we looking at this day?
I don't see anything about
section
that.
Section
8. No, we're actually on section 8B, the last two sentences which talk about Internet voting.
Oh, I see, yeah.
If you move on down to section, the next change comes on section 8AE, which is voting counting system.
Mm-hmm.
If I could back us up just a minute.
Sure.
It's a small matter under D. That is Article 3, Section 8D, as in David, where it makes a statement under to the effect that entitled to accept the ballot and give it effect as the act of the member if either, subsection 1, the name sign purports to be blah, 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 that's kosher, but then, or 2, two or more persons hold the membership as co-tenants or fiduciaries. I don't see the pertinence of that the section about halfway through sub D referencing to the concept of members having co-membership, co-tenants, fiduciaries,
yeah, how
with another.
That would
be stricken unless that's required legally to be in there.
Well, the language, actually, this section, but it pops up in situations where it's a husband and wife who a check, and so the membership is put under their names and as Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Okay, any
objections? Erica, I need to, when you get done, Dave.
Oh, I'm just asking, go ahead.
All right, these are the comments from the election supervisor. He says, the signature requirement offers no additional security and serves to reduce the number of valid ballots. Strongly recommend removing this provision. It's not possible. If this is not possible, then he thinks that we should make sure that this does not require the election coordinator to verify signatures or to verify that the name appears on the voter roll. The ballot verification should rely on PIN codes on the ballot.
If you guys have a PIN code system or some other system for doing it, it would be acceptable. Under California law, the validity of a ballot is usually based on matching the name on the ballot with a membership roll.
We did use PIN codes, and it's very—it's much less time-consuming. Each ballot that was sent had a PIN code, and it was entered into the computer and verified as a valid PIN code.
And the PIN code, it cross-references
to the
a
name.
Roll or something?
Yeah, to the name, to the voter roll.
Okay.
And it's much less time-consuming for the volunteers who are counting these things. So he makes that as a strong suggestion.
I'm not opposed to that. If everybody else is okay with that concept?
Well, I have a question. Was it a reliable system? Did it turn out to be reliable?
Yeah.
And how expensive was it?
The cost of the KPFA election was primarily donated labor. But they it just through a computer system assigned PIN codes to all the members.
I see.
So if I could just, any other comments?
Yes, there's one other comment from the KPFA lab about this. We have not historically it's not been important if Mr. and Mrs. Jones sent in $50 to separate them out into two different memberships. But our minimum required donation is $25.
Yep.
And we have lots of members who send in more. Maybe we've got a $500 contribution from John and Mary Smith. At the KPFA elections, we assign two memberships, or the number of family members named on the donation, if the amount of the contribution was sufficient to justify that number of memberships.
That makes sense.
That's an administrative decision, though. That seems kosher.
Well, I have been intending to ask about that because, like, if I send in a check, and it has both of our names on it. I've been intending, if I were in KPFA, would they automatically decide that we both have memberships if that check is $60? Whereas at KPFT, since I'm only I'm one person calling in and I might not mention both people's names, do they assume that it's only one membership?
Well, on the phone, when you call in your contribution, they ask for your name.
Yes.
And people have to be trained now to say, is this for each of you separately or something? But we haven't done this in the past.
Okay.
Because we didn't have memberships in the past.
Yes.
Well, the question still holds, though, doesn't it? If they call in and they pledge $25 and it's two people, what happens?
That's one membership.
One person.
Because that's one donation. The minimum to qualify. But if they pledge 50,
then
John would be a member and Mary would be a member.
I think that the phone person would have to ask,
yeah.
Do you want it listed under two people or one?
Yes.
What would trigger the question, though?
This should be uniform. So does it need to be, how does it need to be put into the bylaws, or does it need to be?
Does it need to be put in the bylaws?
Mm-hmm.
The question is, we're looking at sub D, does that need to be modified? I personally don't see any reason for it at this stage. I think it's an administrative matter. Is there any proposed modification? And I think Rob's right. We better watch out. If we're going to rewrite every damn section, we're going to be here for a couple of days.
I agree.
We've been on this for more than a year. So
Kevin, does the way it's written now cover this situation where we've got $50 from John and Mary Smith being two different members?
I think it's not a problem, because I think if internally, if you decide that people who put $50 in are entitled to two votes, and you want to give them two PIN numbers because they put 15 rather than $25, you can give each of them a PIN number so they can vote.
Okay. No problem.
Any comments, concerns?
Just one quick question for Carol and Kevin. This is Rob. In some of these areas, particularly around elections, it seems to me that what we want to strive for as the organization develops is to have separate regulations for the conduct of elections, which hopefully can be developed as subsets of the bylaws. Is there some provision that we can make so that as we codify these things, we can develop regulatory stuff and reduce the amount of detail that's in the bylaws and refer to regulations on elections or diversity or other things?
I'm going to kind of suggest we do is consider under section 2, page 30, on the red line version, we have standing committees, Article 8. We may want to have a standing committee on elections and election process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
when we get there, let's talk about
that. We'll get to that one.
I think that these bylaws are too detailed on the election process. That's a general observation I'm going to make, but if that's something we need to do at this point, that's fine. We can certainly try to streamline it later. What I'm very concerned about in this entire process is going backwards and renegotiating everything that we've negotiated to date. I think we all need to realize that we need to get some bylaws done at this point, that no one's going to be completely happy with them. We should move forward, and later we can modify them as we feel is appropriate relative to election process or anything else.
That's right, but we need to ensure that each board member is not foreclosed from making things comments which we feel are necessary. But let's try to stay with those which are absolutely necessary, recognizing that these matters have been processed mightily. A matter of housekeeping, if I could, please. I've heard a couple of beeps in the background. So far we have on with us Carol Spooner, we have Rob Robinson, Steve Bramson, Janice O'Brien,
Janice O'Brien. Who would that be? Interesting.
K-L-M-N O'Brien.
Irish cousin.
Teresa O'Allen. Charles O'Smith. George O'Barnstone. David O'Fertig. And Ray O'Lafore. With Kevin Fink and Eric, your last name, I'm sorry.
Curls,
thank you.
Carol.
Has anyone else joined us? Okay. So
one thing. I'm going to get off in a minute, two. I fully agree with expediting this, but have we just to throw another hairball in it, as attorney...
No, George, if you're getting off, you can't do that.
Work. What about if this is in a community property state, people get divorced?
Okay, this is way out of town, George. Okay? Thank you, and I hope you never get divorced, brother, all right?
Okay.
Carol, though, can I ask a quick clarification? Carol, in my mind, for the operator to know, I mean, the example that Teresa gave is, if I heard it right, would say that there's a check that has two names on it. So we would have to decide whether it's for one person of both people's name up in the upper corner.
We'll have to adopt a policy that instructs the phone volunteers.
I'm saying, what would trigger it from the volunteer? The fact for the amount of money being more than at least up to two.
Yeah.
Two contributions.
Sure. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
If we have an election committee, maybe they can make all of these things uniform, and we won't have to have them in the bylaws.
That seems to be the hope.
They don't belong in the bylaws.
Okay.
I have a question that probably doesn't belong in the bylaws, but since we're not doing things that belong in the bylaws. I wondered about the voting shall be by written ballot. Is it wrong to ask about Braille ballots or not?
Well, Braille is writing.
It's not wrong at all.
Is writing. I think if a person is blind, they request a ballot, we have to provide it in Braille. That doesn't need to be in the bylaws.
Okay.
Access.
I just asked. Okay.
But you're right. It's a very important issue.
Yes.
Okay, any other concerns? We were on sub-D. Okay.
Moving right along.
The next issue, please, Erica.
Sure. We're now in section 8E. The changes here were consistent with our understanding of your desire to have voting by single transferable voting methods. There are a couple different ways of calculating that. They're consistent with our discussions with Carol and checking with some of the other fair vote organizations. We clarified our understanding of the process and would encourage you guys to look at it and make sure it's consistent.
So it's different than the first one?
It's slightly.
Oh, because I found the first one really clear, and I didn't read this one. I thought it was the same.
I think this one actually is probably clearer.
Oh, okay.
I believe Carol Spooner
has some feedback. It's pretty much the same, but, we took out some language and tried to make it tighter so that it was easier to understand.
Mm. Carol, did you have some feedback on this language?
No. David Green has been over it from Fair Vote, so has Caleb. From Fair Vote, so is Keith Kesson from Fair Vote. There's one change that David Green insists is we've got incorrect here, and it is determining the way the mathematical formula should be listed. We're in section 3.
E sub 3,
threshold number.
Mm-hmm.
He says, it should read, the threshold number shall be that number which is equal to the total number. Then we go down to what's in brackets here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You're going to need a bigger bracket outside, and then a small bracket, and then the total number of ballots cast, and the slash sign for the division. And then he wants parentheses around 1 plus the number of vacant seats,
mm-hmm.
and then in paren.
Mm-hmm.
And then a plus one. The everything that's under the divisor or the dividing line there, the one plus the number of vacant seats has to be in brackets, he says. Otherwise, it's total number of ballots divided by one.
Yeah, that makes sense, by the way.
So it's in parentheses, one plus the number of vacant seats in parens and then bracket, right?
Yeah, and then plus one.
Okay.
Can do that.
Okay, is that everyone got that? That's almost a Scrivener's error issue there. Is there anything else in this sub E?
Yeah, let's see.
We just have a couple of typos we're going to clean up from that section generally.
Threshold.
Are we in section 8?
Yes.
8E right now.
All right, 8E. David Green also says the Article 3, section 8E, 5, 4.
Five sub.
Okay.
So that's
page eight.
Roman numeral.
IV. Lowercase Roman numeral.
Lowercase four.
It's actually IV.
Yeah, okay. IV. All right. He says insert after the first sentence ending with declared elected or eliminated.
Sure. Somebody
put that
on hold there.
Oh.
Can I do a roll call real quick here? I'm sorry.
Well, they're having that music on their hold button.
Okay, can I do a roll call real quick here? Carol?
Yeah.
Rob?
Yeah.
Steve?
Yes.
Janice?
Yep.
Teresa?
Yes.
Charles?
Yes.
George? George?
So it's George.
Yeah, George.
Oh, God.
George got off before us.
I thought George
Ray?
Hung up.
Ray? Ray? Okay, that's Ray.
It's Ray.
If
Ray
somebody
must
got
be
his
an
cell
office.
Phone, please call him.
He must be at work.
What number?
Can someone call him on
I've got a mobile phone, which, who knows?
Oh, let me go to my phone book, call him.
Okay, please call him. All right, let's
see
if it's all right, so. It's not her musical background, I guess.
Declared or eliminated, Carol?
Yeah, insert after the first sentence ending with declared or eliminated.
Is Ray LaForest back on? No,
that's George.
Okay, George.
Where are we?
We're on page 8.
Insert Article 3, Section 8, Subdivision E, 5, small Roman numeral 4. Insert after the first sentence ending with the words declared, elected, or eliminated the following wording. The order in which candidates are eliminated shall be recorded as their ranking, paren, highest rank given to last eliminated, lowest rank given to first eliminated, and used in filling vacancies as described in Article 4, Section 10. The reason for this is there is no highest and lowest vote getter. It's the order in which people are eliminated, because with the redistribution of votes, everybody ends up with the same number of votes, which is the threshold number.
Hello? Do you still need the phone number? Took me so long. 212.
I know, we shouldn't be broadcasting a phone number on the air like this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is his work number.
Okay.
212-219-0022.
Okay. Sorry.
Maybe you should just call the switchboard. I won't give you the extension. And just tell them to tell him.
Okay, so Kevin and Erica, do you understand what the reason for that change is and why it's there? It's a technicality of single transferable voting.
I would encourage that.
Is there any objection to that modification? Hearing no objection to the modification.
I didn't hear what it was because I've been looking for the phone book. Could you just say what it is again? I'm sorry.
Well.
Yeah. In single transferable voting, there's no highest vote getter and lowest vote getter. There's an order of elimination.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to be technically accurate, our single transferable voting experts are saying we rank candidates by their order of elimination as highest and lowest, and that we use that rather than the highest vote getter and the lowest vote getter. This is really...
This is really unreasonable.
Is this semantics or what?
I don't know, but this is really an unproductive way to conduct a meeting.
It's just a clarification issue, Janice.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all it is, so I think it's fine from at least our perspective.
Right.
And I was talking about the sound being unreasonable, not Janice's question, I'm sorry.
And
it destroys the phone
call. And I would also like to raise in the following sentence.
And call back in when he can. But putting this on hold just puts the Muzak over the conference call and destroys our ability.
Okay, let's proceed.
Sure. In the next sentence, after the one which Carol referenced, it was a suggestion that in the event of a tie, that the candidate to be first eliminated would be decided by lot, like pulling straws.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone was comfortable with that concept.
I think it's probably the safest method.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
As opposed to, trial by fire or something. Okay, the next issue, please.
The next one is that we inserted a Section F, which is election and voting supervision. This is consistent with our understanding that with regards to elections for delegates, it was your intention to have a national election supervisor as well as local election supervisors, and that under their supervision, all votes for delegates would be forwarded as directed by your executive director to a place and overseen by the national election supervisor as well as the local election supervisor.
I have a question. This is Janice. I looked over my notes, so I'm not sure that I slept this, but national election supervisor, it sounds like a good idea, but is this something that was agreed upon before?
Carol?
Actually, I'm not sure that we discussed this in much detail. But in order to have conformity of the supervision from station to station, I think the foundation has to appoint some expert to be the supervisor who then can give instructions to local supervisors who may have questions about what they...
Does this contemplate that?
That's basically what it says.
That's what it does.
Yeah. And it's cross-referencing a section in Article 5, which talks more about what the roles...
If there's a complete definition of what the person does, right?
Exactly, it does.
Okay, Rob, is this something that you had included? I don't recall seeing this in the WPFW version either.
I'm sorry. That we did that back in way back in June.
But it's,
what's your question?
I'm just wondering, is National Election Supervisor a surprise to anyone other than me?
No.
Well,
anyone else?
I mean, the only issue it obviously would make sense if we had one.
Okay.
The issue really is, I think, if we have to struggle through an election cycle without having a full time person, does that open us to any legal liabilities?
Okay. So this will be a person we'll hire. It'll be an employee of the foundation
or a volunteer.
Okay.
Fair Vote, I think, has volunteered to supervise this election
okay.
for us and give us personnel to do it.
I want to really remark on one comment from our local advisory board at KPFK, as they refer to, that we just merely add in this, where it says, shall be counted by the National Election Supervisor, add phrasing such as, or designated agent, or assignee, or words to that effect, so that individual is not personally required to fly around the country counting ballots.
Under the supervision of?
Yeah. Or shall be counted under the supervision of the National Election Supervisor. Is that acceptable?
Sure.
Well, what does Mr. Fink think of that?
Fine.
And it's really just a minor thing.
Okay.
Any objection?
I'm concerned that it doesn't say who appoints the National Election Supervisor and local election supervisors.
If you go to Article 5, it talks about that. But
yeah, it's on the road.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I'll point it out as soon as we get there.
Okay, thanks.
Next.
Any other comments? Section 9, moving on, we just added a sentence at the very end that provides you with the ability to give notice via a broadcast instead of having to do it by mail.
Any objections?
No.
Next?
Next issue is Section 11, proxies for members.
This is an area where I have some concerns, to be quite candid with the board. Under Section 5613 of the California Corporations Code, you see shareholders or members having rights to delivering proxies, and we're getting rid of that, the right under proxies. And by statute, you cannot do that unless the members approve that. So if you're going to exclude proxy rights, we're going to have members to exclusion at A. And B, I think pragmatically from my perspective, I'm very reluctant to not have proxies avenue for us to get forums.
Say that again.
Somebody's telephone is having a bad connection. Please attend to it.
What I was saying is proxies are oftentimes very helpful devices to make sure that we can obtain quorums. And by excluding the proxies, we're going to make it more difficult to obtain quorums. And it's very unusual, in my experience, to exclude people from being able to generate proxies, because what you're really doing is you're taking away their ability to vote if they're, you know, for some reason unavailable. Medical reasons, they're out of the country or something along those lines. So One of the few things I am going to suggest to the board today is to at least consider how important is it really for us to exclude the proxy vehicle.
I have a question, Kevin. Since our members can only vote by mail, we've said that, how would we solicit proxies other than by mail? And so what's the difference between sending the ballot to them and sending the request for their proxy? In other words, if we're trying to establish, say we've got a bylaws amendment that needs members' approval, and we're afraid we're not going to get enough members to respond to get a quorum to pass the thing, we either have to send them a ballot or a proxy solicitation in order to get a vote out of them.
Right.
So how is the proxy going to help us establish the quorum?
Well,
if they don't respond to this proxy solicitation, why do we think they, or if they're not going to vote on the matter, why do we think they would, you know what I'm saying.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I'm going to interrupt, because I've looked at the current bylaws that were drafted,
uh-huh.
I think last revised in 1999,
mm-hmm.
in the section, Article 4, Section 4.7.
We didn't have members then. This is members' proxies.
But the point is that the bylaws are not being modified in that regard, and 5613 provides that No amendment of the articles, sub E of 5613. No amendment of the bylaws or articles repealing, restricting, creating, or expanding proxy rights may be adopted without approval by the members. There's no change. We're carrying on that exact same section as previously existed.
Oh.
Kevin, do you think that's sufficient legal ground to retain that provision without having a further vote of the members? Given that no modification under 5613 sub E is being proposed?
Kevin?
I'm thinking about it.
Oh, okay.